Sange chutang cho ki cho nam ha Chong chu bar du dag ni kya su ji Dag ni jin so gi pi so nam gi Dro la ben ji sange du par shu I go for refuge until I am enlightened. To the Buddhas, the Dharma, and the assembly of saints, from the virtuous merits that I collect, by the practice of giving and the other perfections, may I attain the state of a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. Refuge until I am enlightened. To the Buddhas, the Dharma, and the assembly of saints, from the virtuous merits that I collect, by the practice of giving and the other perfections, may I attain the state of a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. May all beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all beings never be separated from the bliss which is sorrowless. May all dwell in equanimity, free from aversion. The ground is covered with flowers and sprinkled with scented water. In the middle is Mount Meru, surrounded by the four continents and ornamented by the sun and the moon. By visualizing all this and offering it as a Buddha realm, may all sentient beings partake of the Buddha's pure lands. Om Guru Buddha Bodhisattva Saparyava Ratnamandala Buddhamega Samudha Saparana Samari. Welcome, everybody. So we're continuing our journey through the visions, the second vision of experience, and we're learning how to do the analytical meditation, progressing from loving kindness, compassion to the enlightenment thought. And we finished loving kindness, and now we're ready to read about how to develop compassion, the desire to destroy the suffering of others. Page 125. The benefits of compassion are described in the Compendium of Dharma Teachings Sutra. Avalokiteshvara said, O vanquisher, one who desires to gain Buddhahood does not need to be trained in many teachings, but should be trained in one teaching. If asked, what is that? It is great compassion. It is like this, vanquisher. Wherever the precious wheel of the universal emperor exists, at that place, the seven precious articles of the king exist also. Vanquisher, like that, wherever the great compassion of a bodhisattva exists, there exists all the teachings of the Buddha. So, first of all, who is Avalokiteshvara?
Shenrezig.
Okay, who's Shenrezig?
Buddha of compassion.
Buddha of compassion, okay. And who's the vanquisher?
I would make a guess and say it's the Buddha.
Good guess. 5 points. Yeah, the vanquisher. So Avalokiteshvara, this is from a sutra, okay? So Avalokiteshvara is commenting to the Buddha. This is really common in sutras. Normally the Buddha would only teach when somebody asked or requested or asked a question. But sometimes the Buddha would manifest a questioner to ask the question. Because the students hadn't. And so often we see Avalokiteshvara or Manjushri or somebody giving a teaching, and then the Buddha will say, well said, or something like that. He'll acknowledge that the teaching was valid. So this is obviously in some response. Avalokiteshvara is talking to the vanquisher, the Buddha, about really the importance of compassion. If you only train in one teaching, that's it. Now, the universal emperor, who's that? in Buddhism. So in Buddhism, there are what are called universal emperors, are rulers, benevolent rulers, who are also Dharma proponents. And so they rule large areas, not just some local, you know, king or administrator, but they have a large empire, and they promote the Dharma in that empire. Ashoka would be an example in our time period. The universal emperor is said to have precious articles. The precious articles, if you come on Sunday to the Torah practice, we do the mandala offering, they're listed in that prayer.
That's good to know. I didn't know who they were.
Yeah. There are seven of these precious possessions. The precious wheel, the precious wish-fulfilling jewel, the precious queen, the precious minister, the precious elephant, precious horse, and the precious general. So I'll just read those again if you're taking notes. The wheel, the wish-fulfilling jewel, the queen, the minister, the elephant, the horse, and the general. Now, like many things in Buddhism, there's a deeper meaning. So in this case, the precious wheel, the dharmic meaning is faith. The precious wish-fulfilling jewel is discipline. The precious queen is generosity. The precious minister is learning, or perhaps you could say knowledge. The precious elephant refers to morals with respect to oneself, and the precious horse, morals with respect to others. And the precious general is wisdom. So that's the hidden meaning of those. And so wherever you have a universal emperor, you have those qualities. And just as those things always go together, wherever the great compassion of a bodhisattva exists, there exist all the teachings of the Buddha. So that's the background meaning of that sutra. Would somebody like to continue reading?
Sure. Therefore, the entire root in the Mahayana path is compassion. As it was said in the Sutra Lankara, first of all, the root, and then the excellent result. This is the great tree of compassion. If there is no root, compassion, one will not be able to bear asceticism.
Remember when we talked about the three realms and the form realm and the formless realm? Those folks got up there because they didn't have balance in their practice. So that's just an example of why this is so important. You want to keep reading there?
Also, it was said in another part of the same text, great compassion is the source of many good qualities. So who would not produce compassion toward sentient beings? Even though one suffers for their sake, the joy originating from compassion is measureless. The compassion endowed with such benefits are of three types. A, compassion in reference to sentient beings. B, compassion in reference to the Dharma. And C, compassion in reference to no object.
Okay, thank you. So we're going to dive into this topic a little deeper here and find out about the different kinds of compassion. Would somebody else like to continue reading?
Sure. Compassion in reference to sentient beings. Having directed one's mind to the suffering sentient beings, one wishes that they would be separated from suffering, as it was said by Akhandrakirti. One who completely protects suffering sentient beings is called greatly compassionate. The manner to meditate upon this is to bring one's mother to mind and recollect her kindness, her being one's mother in many lives, and so on, as explained above. Then think, for the reason of having worked and worked for me, she has been roaming in this world without free will and has experienced great torment. This is pitiful. I need to repay her kindness by kindness and her benefit by benefit. What would be the most beneficial to her? She can be benefited directly by being separated from suffering, and indirectly she can be benefited by being separated from the cause of suffering. However, at the present time, having gone in a complete opposite direction, she is experiencing suffering manifestly in this life, and through enjoying great non-virtue, she is producing the cause of suffering. This is pitiful.
You can see here that this is actually a continuation of what we read about last week, the meditation on loving kindness, about the kindness of our mother and so on. Now we've moved over to compassion. Our mother was kind, however, she's suffering, and I need to generate compassion. So this is the next step. It's the second step of the three steps. Okay.
In association with a wish, one should think, how greatly I wish that she be free from suffering and from the cause of suffering. In association with the enlightenment thought, one should think, I will make her gain the state that is free from suffering and from its cause. In association with a prayer, one should think, may she depart from suffering and from its cause. In conclusion of practicing any of these three, one should pray, may the preceptor and Triple Gem see to it that it happens so.
So what is that last line? What kind of prayer is that?
Aspiration.
That's an aspiration prayer, isn't it? Yeah. So we're planting that seed.
Okay. Likewise, one should meditate on compassion for one's relatives, such as one's father and the like, and for other ordinary beings who are manifestly experiencing the torments of various sufferings and are engaged in non-virtue, the cause of suffering. Thus feel compassion and meditate as explained above. To meditate on compassion for one's enemies, think that these enemies have been my mother's many times, and each time they have been very kind by benefiting me and protecting me from harm. Thus apply the same procedure as explained above. Then one should think, though he is harming me, I feel compassion for him, because his mind is now deluded and he has failed to recognize me as his son. As it is said in a scripture, though one is harmed as a repayment of kindness, even then meditate on great compassion in return. The noble beings of this world reciprocate harm with great compassion. Along with compassion, one should think, not only that, but not having obtained control over their own minds, their harming of others will cause them the need to experience the suffering of unceasing hell. As it was said by the Lord of the Yogis, Virupa, meditate on compassion to the kind beings who brought you up with love since beginningless time. Although they benefited you again and again, they are like madmen without free will, committing non-virtuous actions as a result of which they will suffer in the unceasing hell. If you understand it like that, you will be able to accomplish the meditation on compassion for sentient beings. Likewise, bring to mind the categories of the six realms and their individual sufferings. In the same procedure as above, consider how each of them acted as one's mother and brought one up with kindness, and generate the desire to repay their kindness. One should produce an uncontrived joy in one's mind, as if they were free from suffering and the cause of suffering.
Okay, thank you. This analytical meditation is, it's almost like we've been given a format, which is to be followed. This is the same format that we use for loving kindness. You meditate about your mother, then your father, then your relatives, then people in general, your enemies. You go through and you build it. And we're doing the same thing here, aren't we, with compassion. Okay, so that's the first section, compassion in reference to sentient beings. And now, compassion in reference to Dharma. Lauren, would you like to read that?
Sure.
Having directed one's thought to the suffering and the ignorance, the cause of suffering, of sentient beings, one meditates in the matter of desiring to free them from suffering and ignorance, the cause of suffering. The reason for this is that until ignorance, the cause of suffering, is discarded, the result of suffering cannot be relinquished. As it was said in the Pramanavartika,
by Dharmakirti,
the root of all faults is ignorance, and that ignorance is the view that perishable entities are truly existent. Further, it was said by Shantideva, although beings have the wish to discard suffering, they run for it unknowingly, even though they desire happiness. Because of ignorance, they destroy their happiness like a foe. One should think, since that suffering also arises from the cause of karma and afflictions, which in turn originate from ignorance, it is pitiful that sentient beings are endowed with ignorance.
This section goes into it more specifically, that sentient beings suffer because they don't have dharma, basically. They don't understand that ignorance is the problem, and they are deserving of compassion for that. Now the next section, compassion reference to no object. This gets into shunyata, emptiness. It's a very deep topic, and it's easy to go down a rabbit hole about this topic because it's so deep. Just while we read this, I'd prefer not to go down the philosophical rabbit holes, but to just keep in mind that we're talking about compassion here, that basically sentient beings don't understand emptiness. That's what it boils down to. Okay.
Compassion in reference to no object. Even though sentient beings do not exist in their own essence, they are tightly bound by self-grasping, the cause of suffering. Having directed one's thought to this, one meditates in the manner of desiring to free them from suffering and self-grasping, the cause of suffering. As Shantideva said, beings are like a dream, and if examined, they are like a water reed. Again, Shantideva said, but if it were asked, if there is no sentient being in ultimate truth, then on whom should one meditate compassion? For the sake of a result, one accepts that which is labeled through ignorance as the object of meditation. One should think, therefore, even though in their essence all sentient beings do not exist, they fail to understand their true nature and are strongly bound by self-grasping. These beings are pitiful. For this reason, as long as one has self-grasping, one is bound to take birth in this world again and again through the power of karma and the afflictions. As it was said in the Maria Makavatara, as long as one has grasping at the aggregates, one will have grasping at a self. If one grasps at a self, karma is produced. And by karma, birth into this world is produced.
So do you remember when we talked about aggregates? What are the... First of all, how many aggregates are there?
Five.
And what are they?
Form.
Feeling.
Perception.
Yeah.
Body conditioning.
Yeah, this fourth one has a lot of different translations, different words that's been given, concepts, and what's another translation?
Embodied conditioning,
okay, and then the last one?
Consciousness.
Mm-hmm. Why is this important to know this? What does knowing this give us? Why do we even talk about it? These five aggregates, by definition, aggregates are some things that come together, right?
Right.
And what do they appear to produce?
An object.
Which is?
A form.
Sentient beings.
Yeah, sentient beings. The self. Self.
Me.
Me. I, me, mine, ego. And that's the problem. We take these aggregates and we label them me or I. And that is what just about everybody does, unless you have attained a Dharma level. And so, sentient beings are deserving of compassion, because that's really the problem in itself. And that produces karma, and karma produces birth, and birth is, once you have birth, you're in the realm of suffering, that's it. You're in samsara. So this is a really important point here to understand. Okay?
Contemplate the meaning of this by thinking, alas, my kind mother has helped me and benefited me at this time in such ways, and she has indirectly been my kind mother since countless eons. She benefited and protected me from harm each time. Having constantly worked for my welfare, she has been unable to escape from this world of existence and has become worn out by a variety of sufferings. This is pitiful. Right now, this mother is experiencing suffering against her wishes. Since she is not skilled in the methods of discarding suffering, she is engaged in and enjoying the cause of suffering. This is pitiful. How greatly I wish that she be separated from suffering and the cause of suffering. Thus think from the bottom of one's heart, meditate upon this in association with a wish, the enlightenment thought, or a prayer, whichever of these is more conducive. One should produce in one's mind the unbearable feeling of one's mother's suffering having fallen upon oneself. One should think, though she is now worn out by the sufferings of this world, still she is accumulating karma and the afflictions, which are the cause of suffering. How awful! What a grave mistake it is for her. This is pitiful. Although I need to place her in a state free from suffering and the cause of suffering, no one other than the preceptor in Triple Gem has the power to do that. So may the preceptor in the Triple Gem see to it that my mother becomes free from suffering and the cause of suffering. Thus one should pray. Likewise, one should meditate by applying the same procedure to one's father and other relatives. Especially one should meditate on compassion for one's enemies for a long time. Similarly, one should think, it is greatly pitiful that these hell beings, who have been my kind mother, are suffering in the hot and cold hells and are worn out by experiencing suffering. Thus produce in one's mind the unbearable feeling that the suffering of the hell beings has fallen upon oneself, and meditate. Likewise, one should meditate by applying the same procedure to hungry ghosts, and so on. When one has produced an uncontrived desire to free them from suffering, one feels compassion for sentient beings who are endowed with suffering and ignorance, the cause of suffering, because suffering and the cause of suffering originated from karma and the afflictions, and these two themselves arose from ignorance. One should meditate by thinking, may these beings be freed from suffering and ignorance, the cause of suffering. That ignorance also originated from self-grasping at an I, so that even though sentient beings do not exist in their own essence, still they fail to understand this and are tightly bound by the grasping mind. This is pitiful. One should meditate by thinking, may these sentient beings part from suffering and self-grasping at an I, the cause of suffering. Between sessions, one should continually meditate on compassion by focusing the mind, especially upon enemies and the like, for whom it is hard to generate compassion. Upon malicious spirits and the like, whose mind are under the power of delusion. Upon kings, hunters, and the like, who commit great sins. And upon destitute, poor, sick, and protectorless beings, thinking, may I be helpful in dispelling the suffering of sentient beings. If I cannot dispel their suffering, may I help by sharing their suffering. In this way, one should think that by what method one could liberate them from suffering. One should train in the methods by which one does not abandon sentient beings.
Okay, thank you.
So are they talking about Tong Lin there at the end?
Tong Lin is a form of this meditation. It's not the only way to do it, but it is a form of this meditation, yes. It kind of hints at Tong Lin here. Tong Lin, for those of you who don't know, means giving and taking. It's a practice of, or taking and giving actually is more correct. Taking on, visualizing you're taking on the suffering of other beings, and then visualizing you're giving all your merit and happiness. That's a practice. It's actually a pretty advanced practice that was secret for a long time because it's counterintuitive. And so you should have it explained well, I guess is what I'm saying, before you do it, so that you do it right. But yeah, that would be an example of this. This is a kind of I would say maybe a simpler version of that, maybe. So that's the second section on compassion. So we've gone from loving kindness to compassion. So we've recognized our debt and our gratitude to our mothers and sentient beings who have been our mothers. And then we've developed compassion, but we've got to this point where we're really not in a situation where we can really do anything about it, really. We can do these meditations, but as far as actually helping people, we're pretty powerless. And so now that leads to the third section, the enlightenment thought, which is the desire to gain Buddhahood for the sake of others, in which case we will have some power to help sentient beings by teaching Dharma. It may be asked, well then, is it possible to gain full and perfect enlightenment just by abandoning sinful actions and practicing virtues, by meditating on loving kindness, which it desires to benefit others, and by meditating on compassion, which desires to dispel the suffering of others? Though these practices are needed in assisting one to accomplish the unsurpassable enlightenment, but through them alone, one will not be able to attain enlightenment. For example, if one doesn't cut the root of a plant, no matter how many times one cuts off the leaves and branches, they will grow back again. Likewise, if one doesn't cut off the root of worldly existence, self-grasping, one should forget about enlightenment, because the suffering of worldly existence arises from karma, and karma arises from the afflictions, and the afflictions arise from self-grasping. As it was said in the Bodhicharya Avatara by Shantideva, whatever harm exists in this world, and however much fear and suffering may exist, if all of these originate from self-grasping, then of what use is this great ghost for me? If one does not completely abandon that self-grasping, one will not be able to get rid of suffering. Likewise, if one does not eliminate the fire, one won't be able to free oneself from burning. So the great ghost is the great ghost of self-grasping. And it may be asked, well, how do the afflictions arise from self-grasping? Being under the sway of complete ignorance of one's own nature, just as one mistakes a colored rope for a snake, so one holds a self and an I where there is no self and I. Therefore, there arises the grasping at the thought, I, which is imputed upon a baseless object. Due to this, in relation to that I, there arises the grasping of others. In this way, one has attachment to self, hatred towards others, and ignorance of one's own nature. So based upon the accumulation of deeds, or karma, which are motivated by the three poisons, one gains this chain of births in the world of existence. And having taken birth here, all faults arise. As it was said in the commentary on Valid Cognition by Dharmakirti, if there is a self, then one knows other. From the aspects of a self and other originate attachment and hatred. Through the complete relation of these two originate all faults. Therefore, the root of all faults of worldly existence is self-grasping. The intelligent, wise ones who care for their own well-being should look upon self-grasping as an enemy and should diligently meditate on the two enlightenment thoughts in order to subdue it. Through meditating on them, the relative enlightenment thought restrains self-grasping, and the ultimate enlightenment thought is able to extract self-grasping from its root. As was said in the Pramana Vartika, loving kindness and the like do not oppose ignorance, so they cannot destroy the great faults. And also it was said, since ignorance contradicts the view of emptiness, all faults, the nature of self-grasping, are established in contradiction to the view of emptiness. So this is a reminder that there's a famous example that teachers use all the time, that a bird needs two wings to fly. And so we need compassion and wisdom. So we're developing this compassion, but it's not enough. We need to attain wisdom. We need to realize emptiness, in other words, in order to completely rid ourselves of karmic existence. Realizing emptiness and wisdom is not an easy task, but it's part of our task as bodhisattvas. And it's not said that you really realize emptiness until you get to the first bhumi, or the first ground, or the first bodhisattva level, of which there are 10 or 13, depending on which system you follow. But it's a very, very advanced state, very advanced state. And just to give you an idea of how advanced it is, in Sakyapandita's clarifying the sage's intent, he goes into great detail describing these levels, bodhisattva levels. And the first level, at the first level, there are a long list of powers that you realize when you reach that level. One of which is to be able to manifest 100 bodies simultaneously. And then as you go up the bhumis, that number increases dramatically. So these are very high spiritual attainments we're talking about here. So the realization of emptiness is not a small thing. But still, that's what we need to do, because that really is what enlightenment is about. The compassion and the merit generation and all that are the means to get to the accumulation of wisdom. But it's the accumulation of wisdom that really actually defines enlightenment.
Isn't realizing emptiness actually experiencing it?
It's a meditative experience.
Yeah.
You can't get it from a book.
It's not just an intellectual.
It's not. We need the books and the texts and the trainings and so forth to train us how to do that. But if you only listen and contemplate and you don't meditate, you will never realize it. Yeah. Sorry.
No, it's part of the practice.
Yeah. Okay, so would somebody like to pick up the reading for us? Page 132, halfway down, also.
Also, it was said, since ignorance contradicts the view of emptiness, all faults, the nature of self-grasping, are established in contradiction to the view of emptiness. Therefore, meditation on the enlightenment thought has inconceivable benefit. As it was said in the sutra, if whatever merit arising from the enlightenment thought had form, it would fill and even surpass all of space. Further, it was said in the Chuju, even a wretch, a prisoner bound by worldly existence, becomes acknowledged as a son of the Sagata at the moment of his producing the enlightenment thought, and he becomes worthy of salutation by the worlds of gods and men. Thus, if one produces the thought of enlightenment, one's name and purpose are both changed. As it was said in the Bodhisattva Charyavatara, like the philosopher's stone, the excellent thought of enlightenment transforms this impure body, which one has taken into the priceless jewel of a Buddha's body. Therefore, firmly take hold of that which is known as the thought of enlightenment. Thus, the enlightenment thought is like the philosopher's stone that transforms wretched body into an excellent form. Further, it was said in the Bodhicharyavatara, measureless knowledge of the holy navigator of sentient beings has examined well this priceless jewel of the enlightenment thought. Those who desire to part from the world should firmly take hold of the jewel of the thought of enlightenment. Thus, this thought of enlightenment is difficult, it is a great benefit, like a wish-fulfilling jewel. As it was said again in the Bodhicaryavatara, all other virtues are similar to the plantain tree. Having produced the fruit, it perishes. The tree of the enlightenment thought perpetually produces fruits which increase endlessly. Thus it is like the wish-fulfilling tree, which produces only excellent fruit. Further, it was said in the Chujuk, even if one has committed very terrible sins, like a frightened person relying upon a brave man, one will quickly be liberated by relying upon an enlightenment thought. So why don't heedful people rely upon that enlightenment thought? Thus it overcomes sins which are sure to produce results, just as a brave general overcomes enemies. As it was said in the Bodhicaryavatara, like the fire at the end of an eon, it surely burns away great sins in a moment's time. Thus, the enlightenment thought is like the fire at the end of an eon, which burns all the sins of unsure results from their very roots. Since the benefits of it is said to be inconceivable in the world of gods and humans, there is no teaching superior to this thought of enlightenment. The characteristic of the thought of enlightenment, which is endowed with such benefits as an extraordinary practice of gaining perfect enlightenment, being uncommon, this extraordinary practice excludes both the worldly mind and personal liberation, nirvana. Therefore, it is established that the enlightenment thought is the thought of non-residing nirvana. Since the
non-residing nirvana of the Mahayana. So they're making a distinction here between the Mahayana and the foundation path, because they don't have the enlightenment thought. So the two extremes are the worldly mind, which is just samsara, and personal liberation or nirvana, which is the goal of the foundation path. The Mahayana path, the great vehicle, is in the middle way, the famous middle way, the middle path, which is perfect enlightenment. So these it's important to have these terms clear in our mind, because we throw these around, nirvana, enlightenment, and all this. And really, they're not really the same in terms of what we're talking about here. That this enlightenment thought, which leads to perfect enlightenment, is the most superior thought you can have of all. It's the highest spiritual practice there is, according to Mahayana.
According to Mahayana.
Yeah.
Since extraordinary practice is the practice which is labeled as the goal to be accomplished, there is no fault in its referring to the enlightenment thought devoid of obscuration.
Okay, thank you. Somebody else want to read for us?
Yeah, I will. Thus it was explained by the Satyapandita. In this way, the obtaining of the enlightenment thought through a ritual is called the creation of the enlightenment thought. If that enlightenment thought is endowed with the intention of constantly discarding its opposite, it becomes the bowels of the enlightenment thought. If differentiated from the point of view of object, there are two enlightenment thoughts, the relative and the ultimate. From the point of view of the matters of its creation, it is twofold, through words and through realization of the ultimate truth. From the point of view of its nature, it is twofold, wishing and entering. From the point of view of its stages, it is fourfold, that is, obtained through an intention, pure aspiration, full ripening, and devoid of obscurations. From the example point of view, it has 22, beginning with the example of like the earth, until that of like a cloud. And from the assistant point of view, it is composed of 22 different views, beginning with endowed with intention until that is endowed with the body of reality, Dharmakaya.
Okay, there's kind of a lot here. Let's see if we can go through this. There are two enlightenment thoughts, relative and absolute, and then those are subdivided. And then there's an example here of these different ways of looking at it. From the point of view of its stages, there is a footnote 59. Let's go see what 59 says. The footnote says, the first stage, obtained through an intention, refers to the person who has still not realized emptiness, but who still meditates on the enlightenment thought with great intent and faith. The second, pure aspiration, refers to those bodhisattvas of the first to the seventh bhumis, or the stages that I was mentioning a minute ago, who faultlessly possess good thoughts and aspirations for others. The third, full ripening, refers to those bodhisattvas on the eighth to the tenth bhumis, who possess wisdom without making any effort, just like the result of fully ripened karma arises without any effort. The fourth, devoid of obscurations, refers to the stage of Buddhahood. Okay, so that's a breakdown of that one. And then, let's see here. We have footnote number 60. Let's read that.
Where did you see 59? I don't see it.
I don't see it either.
Oh, you don't?
It's not.
It's not in your book?
Footnote 59.
No. You don't have the footnote?
No.
Do you have 60?
60's here, but not 59.
It jumps from 58 to 60?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a misprint. Do you have the blue book?
60.
Huh?
I've got the blue book.
And I have this book, but it doesn't have 59.
Okay. Well.
I don't have any of the footnotes.
Actually, I don't know where 58 is either. I didn't see that.
Okay. Well,
this is the 60's the first footnote I'm noticing.
I read that. Do you want me to reread it?
59? No, I went and found it in the book, but there's no notation for
in
it.
In the text.
In the
it's
text.
Not in
the oh, in the text.
Yeah, it's not noted
oh,
in the text.
Oh, in the text there's no notation.
Yeah.
It should be after the first word on page 135, which is stages. That's 59.
Oh, there's a little tiny 59 there.
Enlightenment.
See where it says 59 right
oh,
there.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's small. That's why I couldn't see it.
Yeah, this is why we have a commentator. Okay, and then down farther, at the end of that paragraph is 60.
Yeah, after Dharma.
Okay, so let's go back and read 60, which are the 22 examples. Like the earth, like gold, like the waxing moon, like fire, like a treasure, like the source of jewels, like an ocean, like a diamond, like Mount Sumeru, like medicine, like a spiritual friend, like a gem, like the sun, like a song, like a king, like a treasury, like an elephant, like a pack animal, like a water spring, like a pleasant sound, like a river, like a cloud. The 22 assistants are endowed with intention, thought, aspiration, application, giving, moral conduct, patience, diligence, meditation, wisdom, skillful means, prayer, power, transcendental wisdom, four beliefs, two accumulations, 37 factors of enlightenment, compassion, insight, wisdom, dharani, self-reliant knowledge, the four complete teachings of impermanence, suffering, selflessness, and peacefulness of nirvana, the only path, and the Dharmakaya, body of truth. The 22 examples and 22 assistants are in a direct corresponding relationship to each other. For example, the first example of like the earth and the first assistant of endowed with intention is explained as follows. Just as grass and trees grow and increase in dependence upon the earth, so virtues grow and increase in dependence upon the enlightenment thought endowed with intention. So these are listing the examples and so on, and then they give you a sample teaching of how they might be connected. And obviously all of these require much more extensive explanation and teaching, and they are teachings in themselves. For example, the 37 practices of Bodhisattva, that's a teaching in itself. So it's just making a reference to these without going into it, because as we've said many times, this book would be 2,000 pages long if if they put everything in it. But it does give you a link if you want to pursue those teachings. Okay? Now we're going to go into more details about the actual enlightenment thought. Somebody want to read that?
Understood its general explanation. The actual practice of the enlightenment thought consists of cultivating A, the wish fulfilled, the wishing enlightenment thought, which is the desire for the result for the sake of others. B, the entering enlightenment thought, which is the training on the path for the sake of the result. And C, the ultimate enlightenment thought, which is the combination of calm abiding and insight wisdom.
Okay, so the entering enlightenment thought, or the wishing enlightenment thought and the entering enlightenment thought, are the two subdivisions of relative bodhicitta. There's relative and absolute. So those two are the subdivisions of the relative. Okay. And then C, the ultimate enlightenment thought, which is the combination of calm abiding and insight wisdom. Calm abiding is the attainment of meditative concentration, total, which is a very high attainment in itself. And that's what's needed in order to do this extremely advanced meditation on emptiness, or what's called insight wisdom here.
So is calm abiding the same as single point of concentration? Is that the same thing?
Single pointed concentration is a component of calm abiding, but it is not in itself calm abiding.
But I mean, it's the practice to attain calm abiding.
Yes. Calm abiding is not actually considered to be attained until one attains complete and total bliss from that.
Right.
And so that's the skill set that we need in order to focus on wisdom meditation.
Which is the analytical meditation we talked about last week.
Which is ultimate enlightenment thought.
Yeah.
So they're connected directly, and that's what insight wisdom refers to, is this attainment of emptiness wisdom, I guess you could call it. I'm not sure I explained that clearly. Was that clear?
Yeah.
Okay. I wish I had a whiteboard here. I would diagram it. Maybe I meant to get one. Well, we have one here, but I just keep forgetting to ask for it.
Oh, I see.
Okay. So now let's go into the wishing enlightenment thought. We're going to backtrack and go through this in more detail. So hopefully it'll make some sense for us here. Okay. Who wants to read this?
Okay. The wishing enlightenment thought, the desire for the result for the sake of others. The essence of the wishing enlightenment thought is the thought which desires perfect enlightenment for the sake of others. It was said by Natrayanatha, the creation of the enlightenment thought is the desire for full and perfect enlightenment for the sake of others. To create such a wishing enlightenment thought is of inconceivable benefit. As it was said by Shantideva, if just the thought, may the brain diseases of sentient beings be dispelled, is of such a beneficial intention that one could gain immeasurable merit, then what need to say of one who wishes that each sentient being dispel immeasurable unhappiness and that each of them accomplish boundless qualities?
Okay, so just to put this in context here, this phrase brain diseases actually means headaches. So, in other words, if something as small as a headache, although when you have the headache, it's not small, but relatively speaking, if that gains immeasurable merit, you know, that somebody, you know, has a beneficial intention towards somebody who has a headache, if that gains immeasurable merit, well, what's to even be said about the enlightenment thought?
Therefore, the creation of the wishing enlightenment thought is very rare. But having generated it, one becomes endowed with inconceivable benefits. As it was said by Shantideva, has either a father or a mother a thought so beneficial like this? Do the gods, hermits, or even Brahma have this beneficial thought? If those sentient beings never dreamed before of such a beneficial thought, even for themselves in a dream, how could they generate it for the sake of others? This being the case, it may then be asked, what is the cause that produces the enlightenment thought? The answer is that it arises from great compassion. As it was said in the Bodhisattva Pitaka, great compassion is that which precedes the strong desire for enlightenment by the Bodhisattva. Hence, if one does not have the cause, compassion, then there will not arise the result, the enlightenment thought. Since compassion is rooted in loving kindness, one should produce uncontrived loving kindness and compassion in one's mind stream. So if one produces the desire of sentient beings, that sentient beings, the object of one's meditation, be endowed with happiness and be parted from suffering, then produce the uncontrived thought. It is my duty to place all these sentient beings in the state of happiness and liberate them from suffering. Although I'd love to do this, right now I don't have the ability to perform such a task. Even those greater than I, such as Brahma, Sakra, and other great worldly beings, do not have such power. Also, even those included in the ranks of noble ones, such as Sravakas, Pratyeka Buddhas, and the like, do not have such power. Then who has it? Only the omniscient Buddhas have such power. The reason for this is that the Buddhas are free from all faults. They are endowed with all noble qualities. They have acquired power over the state of ultimate happiness. And they have the passion and the power of transcendent activities to liberate all sentient beings from the disadvantages of worldly existence and personal liberation. If they are prayed to, then only the Buddhas, and no other than them, have the ability to fulfill easily all temporary and final aims. At any rate, I must attain such a state. Further, having gained it, like the skillful ship captain who magically created a beautiful city on an island in order to refresh the traders who were wearied by the long journey at sea, so I will temporarily place all sentient beings upon the stage of personal liberation by means of the three vehicles in accordance with their individual wishes to belong to any of the three classes of practitioners. Having refreshed the three classes of practitioners from the sufferings of worldly existence, having gradually purified them, I will finally place all sentient beings who pervade space upon the stage of Buddhahood. This is the only lineage which practices the wishing enlightenment thought through guided instructions. Thus it was said. To contemplate the meaning of this, for a long time one should contemplate. Alas, although these beings who were my kind parents desire happiness, due to the lack of skill in the methods of obtaining happiness, some of them are actually experiencing suffering, and some of them are creating great non-virtues, the cause of suffering. They are blinded by a cataract-like ignorance and are separated from the supporting staff of liberation, unsustained by a preceptor's guidance, which is like an eye for the blind. They are turning away from the path of liberation and of the higher realms and are roaming on the edge of the abyss of the three lower realms. This is pitiful. Thus meditate on compassion for a long time. However, just saying how pitiful will not be of benefit. I must free them from suffering and place them upon the stage of happiness. But at present, I don't have the power to do so. Who has such power? Such a power is possessed only by a Buddha, who has accomplished the two purposes. Even a single beam of light that issues forth from a Buddha's body has the power to place inconceivable sentient beings upon the stage of personal liberation, and even a single Dharma discourse given by the Buddha is able to place an inconceivable number of beings upon the stage of personal liberation. In brief, through directly or indirectly seeing, hearing, remembering, or touching the Buddha, countless sentient beings have the ability to easily accomplish happiness. Such power lies only with the Buddha. Therefore, for the sake of my mother's sentient beings, how wonderful it would be if I could win that Buddhahood of complete omniscience.
Okay, thank you. Just explain a couple of things here. So the Buddha who has accomplished the two purposes, The two purposes are benefiting self and others. It's as simple as that. And the way to benefit self is to benefit others. And then there is a reference, even a single beam of light that issues forth from the Buddha's body has the power to place inconceivable sentient beings upon the stage of personal liberation. There is a sutra, I forget the name of it, but it's something like the Buddha's lights. And it's a pretty long sutra, and the Buddha explains to a questioner all the different kinds of lights he's able to emanate from his third eye. And all these lights have different names and different functions. And there's a lot of them. The Buddha goes on and on about explaining these lights and what they do. And if you read the sutras, very often Buddha will have a crowd of disciples there, and he'll emanate a light. And then 500 arhats, or 500 beings attained arhatship, or, you know, these beings that are there because of this light. And they happen to be there. They have the karma, obviously. The result comes from these lights. It's one of the Buddha's many, many powers that the Buddha possesses. And so it isn't just some nice saying, oh, the Buddha emanated light. They actually have specific results according to the light that's emanated. It's a pretty interesting sutra to read, I think. Okay.
So by whatever means needed, I will obtain that state of perfect Buddhahood, thus produce such thoughts like a thirsty person desires water. Then one should think from the depth of one's heart, having gained Buddhahood, I will temporarily place all sentient beings in the state of personal liberation through the three vehicles, and I will finally place all of them upon the stage of Buddhahood after having gradually purified the three classes of practitioners. Then one should pray very intensely. May the preceptor and Triple Gem see to it that it happens so. Even between sessions, one should constantly wish, wouldn't it be wonderful were I to gain that perfect Buddhahood, which is the source of good qualities, a wish-fulfilling gem. It is of great importance that either in the six periods of the day and night, or in the morning and evening, one should recite the seven branch prayer, followed by the brief taking of refuge and the creation of the wishing and entering and enlightenment thoughts, as found in the body of Charyatavara. This should be done on a daily basis without taking a break.
Okay, thank you. The three classes of practitioners referenced here are Shravakas, Prajnabuddhas, and Bodhisattvas. And the seven-branched prayer, this is another prayer that we do on Sunday practice if you want to know what it's referring to. It generates a huge amount of merit, which is why it's often included in sadhana or sadhana practices. So if you come on Sunday, you'll get to say that prayer. Or you can get a copy and say it, as it says here, every day, daily basis, without taking a break. It's basically a summary of the path, is what it is.
Is that the same seven-branched prayer that is recited during Shenrizi
Puja?
Shenrizi. Is it said in the Shenrizi practice?
Male beings attain happiness in the causes of happiness?
I don't come on Wednesday, so I'm not sure if it's in that sadhana or not.
Okay.
Are there seven sections that going for refuge? Confession. There's two versions of it. There's sutra version and tantra version. So I'm not going to list them because I'll get mixed up. Anyway, you can check the text afterwards and it'll tell you. Okay, so I think we'll stop there for this evening. We're in the midst of the enlightenment thought, and there's lots more to come. So let's stop there. Are there any comments or questions or complaints people want to make?
The free will was mentioned a couple of times in this reading, and I'm just kind of wondering about that because it kind of is a contradiction to karma and cause and effect.
Well, what it said was beings do not have free will.
Oh, okay, that's okay, yeah.
because they're subject to karma.
Right. Okay.
And afflictions. And we think we have free will, and we talk like we have free will, and we say we have free will. But when somebody's screaming at you and throwing things at you, sometimes we react automatically. And so we really don't always have free will. We have these afflictions and karmic debts to pay.
Okay. I thought it was... Yeah, I wasn't reading it that way. But yeah, that's my understanding, is we don't have free will.
Yeah,
if everything is
real. We sort of do, but not really.
Well, we think we do.
We think we do, yeah.
Yeah. It's the other, it's part of the
belief. If we do this practice, we'll have it, but... Yeah. Good, that's a good point. Okay, any other comments? Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
At the very end of this prayer that we're about to say, the dedication prayer, at the very last sentence, you have the seven steps listed of the seven branch prayer, of the sutra version of it.
Right.
Prostrating, offering, confessing, rejoicing, requesting, and beseeching. Requesting refers to requesting that the Buddhists teach, because Buddhists don't teach unless you ask. And beseeching that they not pass into nirvana until samsara is emptied. Again, Buddhas need to be requested to stay. We shouldn't just take it for granted that they're going to hang around and teach us. It doesn't work that way. We need to request that they... and also that applies to just any Dharma teacher. If you want a Dharma teaching, you request it. They don't just hand it out like candy automatically. You have to show that you're interested. So that's good to know. So there's a list of the seven right there.
And confessing is purification.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's say our dedication prayer. So nam dei tam jizi pani tom na ni pe da nam pam jite ke ga na ji bang du pe Sipe tsole do adro arsho Jangchu sem cho grim po che Ma ke pa nam ke gyur chi Ke na yun du pyo par jam Gwan ne gong du pyo par sho Jam pa po vi ji dar ken pa tam Guntu Sangpo Deyan Vishinde Deda Gungi Jesu Daguche Gevadari Tamche Ratuno Tusu Jebi Gyawa Chanche Ki Nyewa Gangla Chotunga Pagi Da shen ge ve sa wa di kun kyang Sang po cho chu rab tu nyu war gi Chak sa wa da chun shok shok pa lang Je si rang gu shing so wa yi Ge wa chung ze da gi chi sa pa By this merit, may all attain omniscience. May it defeat the enemy wrongdoing. From the stormy waves of birth, old age, sickness, and death, may the ocean of samsara, may all beings be free. Bodhicitta is precious. May it arise in all beings in whom it has not arisen. May it never decline where it has arisen. But ever grow and flourish. In whatever way valiant Manjushri and Samantabhadra know how to transfer merit, so do I dedicate all my own virtues, that I may train to be like them. Through this dedication, praise the Supreme by the victorious Buddhas of the past, present, and future. I, together with all sentient beings, dedicate these roots of virtue to attaining Buddhahood. May whatever virtue I may have gained from prostrating, offering, confessing, rejoicing, requesting and beseeching, dedicated to attaining perfect enlightenment. Thank you.